Violent crime is on the decline in Rapid City. Those traffic citations, however, are on the rise. From SDPB, today is Monday, April 28th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome Rapid City Police Chief Don Hedrick. We'll talk about the impact of traffic personnel, what kinds of federal grants are helping grow a more ethical department, and what new recruits want from the profession. Then author and poet Linda Hazelstrom joins us. We'll talk about how many poems are lost to distraction, and she'll read poetry from her forthcoming book. Later in the hour, we head over to the Full Circle Book Co-op in Sioux Falls. Owner Sean Lidster shares his latest work as well. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota's largest city is closing in on a population of 80,000 residents, and that is not even measuring the spikes of tourist season. So today we are checking in with Don Hedrick. He is Rapid City's chief of police. He stepped into SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio to talk about public safety and innovation in recruiting an ethical police department.
Just this week, the City Council approved a Northside precinct for the Rapid City Police Department. And, you know, we've had a substation up there for years, but it was somewhat small, and it really doesn't have the ability to move us in the future as we need to continue to grow as our population does. And we've established some really great relationships in this neighborhood where the building is going to be. Mm-hmm. A lot of community outreach and engagement. We have a very strong contingent of our youth outreach team working in the neighborhood. So really what we're going to be able to do is continue to do the work that we're doing with the community, those partnerships we built over the years, but also it allows us to expand into other areas of town. That's sort of been a shift over the last few years for our police department, decentralizing. And that's kind of the future as the city continues to grow.
That was somewhat of a controversial topic, the idea of precincts and decentralizing in Sioux Falls during a previous mayoral race. What's your advice for the city of Sioux Falls?
Well, you know, I'd imagine Sioux Falls has seen growth much like Rapid City, and it's going to continue to grow. So I think for us in public safety, we need to make sure that we're keeping an eye on that and making sure that we're able to respond as quickly as we can to emergencies. That's an expectation for law enforcement and fire and all of the first responders, is that when you pick up the phone and you need help, we have a quick response. And with Rapid City being so large and spread out already, a key piece of future planning for us has been able to make sure that we are able to keep our calls for service manageable, but also we're able to quickly respond.
Yeah, we do have Chief Toombs scheduled for this week, too, so you don't have to answer for the city of Sioux Falls.
Oh, no.
We'll bring
okay.
it up with him, but thanks for that insight. Looking back at some of your crime statistics for January of 2025, tell me some of the highlights, but first, help us understand how the pandemic. Are there blips that were like, hey, this happened during the pandemic, and we have to take that into account when we look at crime statistics in 2025?
Yeah, I think so. South Dakota was not immune to some of the nationwide trends that we saw of violence. Here in Rapid City, we saw record levels in the 2020 and 2021 timeframe. Since then, things have got better, but we found that we still have work to do. We still have to make sure that we're able to keep up. And one of the key other trends we saw here, you know, back in the COVID timeframe, we had many, many police officers leaving the profession, just deciding they wanted to do something else. I can remember a 14-year veteran, very, very good person, very good police officer, telling me he was going to go sell insurance because the hours were better, the pay was better, there was less negativity. And that was a very difficult time for us. At one point, we were trying to hire 35 people, and when you're talking about 170 sworn police officers, 35 is a big number. Mm. And what that really did is it caused us to not be able to be as proactive as we wanted to be. So things like our extra patrols downtown, our even some of our traffic enforcement, we were simply trying in that moment to keep up with the calls for service coming in. However, we're coming out of that. I think we have 10 openings currently, which is a big step forward. Mm-hmm. And having that staffing in place, what that does is it allows us to continue with that proactive work that we're asked for every single day. You wouldn't believe how many requests we get for traffic control here in our city, and I'm sure it's similar in other places too.
Your citations have increased by 101%.
Yeah, well, I got to give credit. About a year and a half ago, we settled into defining roles for traffic enforcement.
Okay.
So we picked a couple folks. We were able to get a grant through the South Dakota Highway Safety Program that helped cover their positions, and that is their sole focus all day, every day. So mm-hmm. I think making it somebody's concern really helped because, and also being able to have the freedom to not be so tied to all the calls for service, having somebody that was able to be proactive in that area was really helpful.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that recruitment, but before we move on from the crime statistics, tell me a little bit about, so all categories have seen a decline since 2020 except for sexual assault, which mm-hmm. increased by 7 cases when compared to 2020. Are you at pre-2020 numbers, or are you kind of down to where you were? Like, that's what I'm asking about the pandemic. Are we still up from 2019, 2018?
We're right about in the same range. The difficult thing about those types of crimes is that they are in a very intimate type of setting. You know, they're not typically out in the public. Mm-hmm. Very, very difficult for prevention efforts for law enforcement on an issue like that. And really the best thing that we can do is education, inform, and also really encourage folks to call. We got to have that.
Reporting,
we got to have people calling us, correct.
Yeah. And people don't report it if they don't think they're going to get
correct
service or help.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's a trust factor as well.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk more about this recruiting because I look at some of the grants that you've had, COPS grants and other federal grants. Mm-hmm. Are those grants at risk at all? What is as the federal government trims in size? What do you know about the future of some of those grants?
Well, obviously, that's a concern for us because it's been a primary way for us to grow in a efficient and in a way that's helpful to the, you know, we're funded by tax dollars, so we're always trying to look out for efficiencies. And, you know, we have many people that we've hired on grants to help us grow and build where we need to be. So far, we haven't heard anything about those grants being canceled, and our plans, whether it pans out or not, we also are planning to apply for another federal COPS grant to help us next year. But of course, you know, there's always that concern. And so far, we haven't heard anything different, though, which is, good for us.
Tell me a little bit about the ways that you changed how you were recruiting that you think were successful and maybe even innovative.
Yeah, no, thank you for that question. You know, I think for us, when we were in that real tough hiring crunch, we had to think differently. And we conducted a survey of our staff to figure out what was important to them. You know, what was important to me 23 years ago when I started is very different than what's important to very young and newer folks in the field. And we found that wellness continually came up as something that our newer recruits and our younger generation wants. They want more access to days off. They want access to things like red light therapy and acupuncture and, more access to time to get away in the hills and decompress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of went into it thinking, well, they just probably want more pay. And that really wasn't accurate. And so I'm glad I had some very smart people around me that told me we need to ask our folks, see what's important to them. Right. And what we did is we tried to leverage our resources towards building those programs in our department to, one, keep the good people that we have doing this work, but two, it's also it's a recruiting factor as well. When people see these wellness programs in place, it's something they're interested in. It's, I think it's helped us attract very good candidates.
Yeah, integrative health. I think that would be what I'm hearing you say, more holistic look at health. I've also noticed a lot on the recruitment website about integrity and service, and that gets to this idea of bringing in people who want to be of service to their community over people who might think, hey, this is a thrill and a rush to be a cop on the street.
Right.
Talk about the culture.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. When we're looking for a candidate, that's a primary piece of what we look at when we're trying to bring in somebody new. What type of service background do they have? And I don't have the data in front of me, but what I can tell you, many of the recruits that we brought in over the last 3-4 years have a service background, whether it's military or prior law enforcement or even volunteerism. Mm-hmm. That's something we take a look at. Do we have a candidate that wants to give back, that wants to help, that cares about our community, that wants to make things better? That servant mindset is a key piece of what we look at when we're looking at new recruits.
Any final thoughts that you have, safety tips for people moving into summer, the thing that you always forget and you have to remind people to, A, don't leave your gun in your car unlocked and things like that. What else?
You know, it sounds very simple and basic, and I totally understand that. But if you see something, you have to call. We can't be everywhere at once. We need the public to help. You know, the police are the public and the public are the police, and we got to work together for a safer community. So I would say if you're seeing something, don't ignore it. If it looks strange, it probably is. Your gut's telling you it's odd for a reason. You'd be better off calling than not. So help us out. Give us a call. See something, say something.
There are people who are afraid to call even if they have legal status and a green card because they're afraid of the police right now. They're unsure about deportation and removal. What is your relationship with Homeland Security, your role in that as Rapid City police officers? What do you need people to know?
You know, I would say for us, nothing has changed. We continue to do our job and we respond to whatever is put in front of us. You know, if we're running into folks with, a status that is, you know, illegal or however you want to word that, we would do what we would normally do. We'd contact our federal agencies that assist with that. But for us, it's business as usual. We haven't seen a ton of that here in Rapid City. But if somebody was out breaking the law, we would appropriately handle it just like we always would.
Chief Don Hedrick, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you.
How many poems are lost to the distractions of modern living? We're going to invite South Dakota author and rancher Linda Hazelstrom back to the show now. She is an award-winning poet. Her books include Bitter Creek Junction, Gathering from the Grassland, A Plains Journal, and Walking, The Changes. Her work has always been influenced by South Dakota's landscapes, creatures, and nature. She stepped into the SDPB Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City to share poems from her forthcoming book. So the last one was Walking, The Changes with James Parker.
Yeah.
Largely outdoors, out of doors, you know, prairies, hills, looking for the poetry and in photos, in the smallest, the smallest thing to the sweeping, you know, the most sweeping thing. How does the collaboration work? How did the two of you share things back and forth?
Nope. And that's the beauty of it. I send him my poems, and he will send me photographs and a finished book. And I don't, occasionally I say, where did you find that? But I don't question him.
Yeah.
I don't look over his shoulder. I don't follow him around. I'm assuming because this book is set, I'm assuming that he might go to my ranch and look around there. But again, I will tell him, there's my fence line.
Yeah.
You can go do anything inside this. But
yeah.
I don't dictate.
So how much of the ranch has changed then. When you look at the poems that you maybe wrote that were in some obscure magazine, and you're pulling that out again, and it was about the landscape or the ranch, is it different now? Is it an entirely different poem?
And the landscape. Yeah, the landscape isn't different. The management is different. I'm not doing it, and so I try not to even look at it. I lease the place, and I have set certain rules in place about that, what they can do and what they can't do. And then I pretty much try not to look.
So you don't know how they're doing?
You know, it's like if you had to rent out your basement.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You don't want to spend too much time
overthinking that. Yeah.
Thinking about it. Yeah.
Do you find messages from your former self in some of the poetry, though?
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
Yes.
How so?
And memories. Wonderful memories.
Yeah.
And some sort of negative memories sometimes, too.
Yeah.
So
some things are lurking there.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with them again?
Well, I have to deal with them again, or I've dealt with them in the poems, and I say, oh, yeah, that I handled that pretty well. Or I wish I'd written more about that.
Right. Did you bring something to read? I'd love to hear what you're working on now. Something.
I brought several things.
Wonderful.
That will be in this book, and yeah. I would like to talk about them
a
little bit.
What's first? What's up first?
Well, I think you were saying something about what do you say to the landscape, and this is a poem that has to do with the cows, which are a vital part of the landscape in my world, the way we do it.
Yeah.
And this poem was written for a cow called Can Opener. And the poem is called Cows Hold Grudges. And I was inspired to do it. I read something in Utney Review in 2007 that said, science magazines have informed us that cows hold grudges. And I thought, they had to ask science magazines? They could have asked any rancher. Yes, cows hold grudges. This poem, I'll read you just a little bit of it. We used dehorning paste just once. The ad said burning horns off baby cows with acid was more humane than cutting. It wasn't. They still felt pain. I didn't dab enough on one calf's horn. She grew a twisted stub. She kept so sharp, we called her Can Opener. And every time I handled her for 15 years, I dared not turn my back. She remembered, and her intention was to open me. She held a grudge.
I love that. Cows
hold grudges. She definitely had a grudge.
Yeah. What else did you bring? Let's hear another one.
I want to give you a sample of this book.
Okay.
I should have said this earlier, but
sure.
Some of the titles in this book. Mm-hmm. Bison Aren't Buicks. Bumper Stickers and the Politics of Rage. I think that's very appropriate right now. Mm-hmm. Friends Don't Let Friends Drive Grass Guzzlers. Bible Studies, Checkers, A Pet Turtle, and a Shelby Mustang. It takes a lot of skill to weave all of those topics.
Yes, I need to know more.
And the topics, they're places I've been. I was looking back to our travels to the Isle of Skye, Loch Stemster. I was looking back to a friend of mine called Cher, who had a bookstore in Columbia, Missouri. And she and I were in there one day, and a young man came in to rob the place.
Oh.
And that was an interesting I wrote a poem about it. The poem is in this book. And Potluck is the title of one of them. There's an essay about the judge. My mother married my father, my stepfather. And then a few years later, he decided that it would be appropriate for him to adopt me. Mm. And my parents went to Custer and talked to Judge Davis and had it all the legalities arranged, and that at a certain point, Judge Davis sent them out of the room, made them go out and sit in the hall. And he started asking me how this man treated me and if I would be happy to have this man as my father. It makes me cry again.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a remarkable thing for a judge to do for a 9-year-old girl. And I've recently started doing research on him and find that this was typical of the way he behaved, that he was that sort of man. But it was immensely frightening and wonderful to me to have this man in his official judicial robes sit down with me and ask me. and say that, you know, if there's anything, if this man has ever mistreated you, you can stop this whole thing right now. Mm. And moreover, here is my phone number. And if he ever does mistreat you, call me and I will stop it.
Oh, wow.
What a wonderful thing for a child to hear that's been without a father.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
would you have written about that or processed it when you were nine?
Oh, no. No.
You wouldn't have
remembered
it. Because you were writing.
Well, I was keeping journals when I was 9 years old. So yeah. I think that I probably wrote it down. And that's why I remember it so well.
Yeah.
But
this is not a bad way to go through life, writing poetry.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. Yeah, to write things down. I don't care if it's poetry or not, just to write it down.
Yeah.
There was a horrible incident that caused me to destroy a lot of my journals. And that is my number one rule. Never, ever, ever destroy anything that you have written.
No, you tape them shut. I remember you taught me that in a workshop.
Yeah.
Duct tape them so you can't get to them, but don't destroy them.
If they're destroying, yeah. Yeah.
Did you intentionally?
You've heard me talk about that before. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a big deal. That's a big day.
Terrible. That's why I talk about taping them shut.
All right. What else do you want to read for us today? I'd love to hear more.
I want to read one called Distractions. By the way, I should have said this earlier. This book is dedicated to Jerry Ellerman, my husband.
Yeah.
I had not shown him any of the book. He did not know anything about it, and I was looking forward to showing it to him. And he was killed in a car accident a few years ago. So this is called Distractions. While I pulled on that garter belt, I had a thought that might have been a poem. But by the time I fastened those clips on the nylons, it was gone. Eyeshadow was so hard to apply, I finally gave it up, but not before losing more ideas. I thought of rebellion while I ironed his shirts, but I didn't write it down. All this is in the past. I haven't ironed a shirt in years. How much poetry is lost to women ironing? How much when women are carefully dabbing on chemicals? Pluck an eyebrow, lose an ode. Lipstick leaves lyrics languishing on the linoleum. Iambics seldom lunch with idioms. Pentameter's poetic pantyhose are full of runs. Revoked iambics seldom lunch with idioms. Leave the rules in books. Scrawl your truth across the pages of your journal. Let those verbs fly freely. Smile and scribble. Doodle and scratch and wait. Revision arrives in its own sweet time. Be ready. Keep your journal at hand and write it all down. Don't be distracted by anything.
I love that one.
Good.
I'm going to pin that to my ironing board.
Okay, good. Outstanding.
And then I'll walk by it and the ironing board will just hang on the wall and never come down.
Yeah.
Pin it to your vanity bathroom mirror, to your ironing board. And put a notebook next to it. Oh, I love that. Thank you. Okay, did you bring anything else? Because I definitely want to get to more poetry if you have it in front of you and I can't see
There's
you.
There's another one.
All right, let's do it.
There's a story that goes with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You might be too young. A few years ago, the town of Deadwood was known for its houses of ill repute.
Right.
And eventually, a number of officials stormed in there and chased the ladies out, and that was quite a scene, and I happened to be living in Deadwood at the time, so I have a lot of notes about that. But a few years after that, they sold a lot of the furnishings of houses, and my husband, Jerry, went there to Deadwood and bought a cast iron bathtub.
Nice.
Now, I don't know if you have ever taken a bath in a cast iron bathtub.
Yes.
But once you fill that thing with hot water, it holds the heat for hours. These little plastic things that we have in our bathrooms now are nothing compared to a cast iron bathtub. And for a poet to be able to fill a cast iron bathtub with hot water and sit in it, with a table nearby with a notebook. That's where I write a certain amount of things. So here is a poem about that. and about the fact that as I was sitting in that bathtub, I could not help thinking about the women who must have used it before me. The cast iron bathtub. 40 degrees outside and a cold wind whispers that I need a hot bath. Carefully, I choose from aromatic oils. Clove creates comfort. Frankincense eases tight muscles. Am I getting a cold? Eucalyptus is the answer. If my stomach is upset, I'll use peppermint. Lavender calms my mind and body while rosemary massages sore muscles. Orange oil soothes my skin. I choose lemongrass, reminding me to be of good cheer. Slowly, the old cast iron bathtub soaks up the heat while I lie back and think of the place we bought it. Deadwood, that notorious city when the whorehouses were being cleared from the town's reality, though not its history. I close my eyes and hear its story, hear laughter, gold coins changing hands. I concentrate my mind on the sorrow and the pain it may have soothed.
Thank you for that. Wow. I feel like I know so much about you, and then I'm like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Don't burn those notebooks, Linda.
Oh, no indeedy.
Listen, though, you mentioned Jerry. You mentioned the judge when you were 9 years old. I saw that your friend Rick, and he's been on the show a lot here on SDPB, has passed away. Rick Mills, wonderful railroad expert. You could ask him so many things about so many things. Poets feel this.
Yes,
perhaps,
but I haven't
more than many people do. Is it painful to be a poet?
Oh, Lord, yes. I mean, because not only do we have the personal pain, and you mentioned Rick.
Yeah.
I've known Rick since he was 9 years old.
A moment for Rick.
I
just found that out this morning. I'm not even processing it yet.
Yeah. And obviously he was known clear across the state.
Yeah.
Once he got the courage to start talking about the things that he truly loved. But yeah, it's very painful. And we notice things. I mean, I try not to write poems about Israel and places that I haven't been.
Yeah, right.
Because I know, well, one reason, I know that it's universal, that some of the emotions that are felt by people there are felt by people closer to me, and I could see them and observe them and write about them.
Yeah.
But also, I want the people that live there where that's happening to be writing about it.
To do the writing, yeah.
I don't think that I should take that over any more than I should take over their land or their culture.
Right.
So.
We have time for one more poem if you've got something else in front of you. This Poetry Month.
I think I'll read a little bit. I may not be able to have enough time to read all of this, but it's Remembering Judge Davis. The introduction is, I was 9 years old. I don't remember my birthday that year, but a month later, on August 14th, I was adopted by my mother Mildred's new husband. And we always celebrated two birthdays in my family, my adoption birthday and my birthday. A photograph shows me on adoption day in a ruffled plaid dress in front of the old brick courthouse, clutching a little white purse with my white shoes perfectly aligned. I'm smiling stiffly. Adoption was a new experience. After the ceremony, my legal father, John Hazelstrom, brought me a gold ring I still have, and we all had ice cream. I didn't realize that by becoming the daughter of a rancher, I had changed the direction of my life forever. I didn't realize I had pledged my soul to a ranch, to acres of tawny grass and dry creeks that would absorb my blood and sweat as they had my father's and still look parched. I was still dreaming of prancing black stallions. Now my dreams are full of waddling cows. I wrote that in one of my first books.
Yeah.
And I'd been studying the photograph I described and discovering in it not only memories but information I did not consciously recall. Looking more carefully at that photograph helps me remember vignettes about the way my mother and I arrived at that place and time. having our images recorded by my new father, my mother's third husband, which she didn't confess for years. Before that day, I had been fatherless. After it, I had both a real father and a biological one, an important distinction. And I had a trusted friend, something I have failed to appreciate until recently, more than 50 years later. One of my earliest memories is of crouching under the kitchen table while Mother screamed and smashed my biological father's liquor bottles in the sink. Well, I'll pause there. I'll stop there. So.
Still my favorite, Linda Hazelstrom. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. 7 years ago, a pair of writers decided the city of Sioux Falls needed a fresh cultural gathering space. Full Circle Book Co-op was born. It's a place for poetry readings and music and featured artists. Any given night, you'll find people writing there or playing chess or just hanging out downtown. There's even a scriptorium for private study, game night, or book club meetings. Now, you may have heard owner Sean Litster on the show before. Coming off of Independent Bookstore Day and closing out Poetry Month, I brought the microphones to the bar at Full Circle. We begin with a preview of a new book that highlights the first 5 years of the store.
There's a lot of stories that people have brought to the table, you know, customers, and people who've just been here over that time. Lots of cool photographs. There's like the history of the shop, how we started. The fun part for me is there's a chapter of like everything that we've learned and how you can do it yourself, you know. So we're making it very easy for you to take whatever blueprint we've had here and open up your own cool little spot, you know, because I want to see more fun things happening. So I think some people want to be like sort of gatekeepers of that knowledge, but I have no interest in that. I just want to see everybody else doing everything fun, you know. That.
What were your intentions when you opened this? What did you want it to be?
The reason we opened it is because we didn't have, there wasn't that spot where everybody sort of congregated in terms of the arts, you know. Like the Black Sheep Coffee had closed down, the bookshop downtown had shut. So there wasn't that gathering point, and we were missing events, you know, things were happening. Kafea did a poetry event, and Jason, who I opened it with, he didn't know about the event. And he's like, well, that's something I should know, you know, he's an English teacher and a poet and a writer and everything. And that was kind of the idea of, like, well, if we can make a congregating space and then a creative space for people to come and, you know, encourage people to know that they can do it, you know, so that kind of thing. That was the idea.
What has been your biggest success?
The events that we have, I think, is what we're most known for and what will be the lasting memory of the place. Because, as you know, we do everything. We have 5 to 10 events a week on any average week. So we do a lot here. So a lot of cool, memorable things, whether it be music or poetry or there's so much I couldn't even go into it, you know. You know, I wish I could take credit for it, but it was all Jason's idea. So I tagged along, you know, and I just said yes.
Yeah, say yes, live a little.
Yeah.
What surprised you about it? Where did you end up that you thought, I didn't know we were going here, but here we are?
The response from people who like us, which is really cool, you know. I'm sure you know about when we had the rock thrown through the window and all that stuff and all those troubles. The community that came out to support when they didn't have much money gave us money. And that was a big surprise for me, and it really sort of cemented not the importance of what we're doing, but what maybe people feel is important about the place. That I think that has been the biggest surprise, because I was just, you know, just going along for the ride a little bit and just having some fun, and you know, and then but then it I think that changed things in my head of what this place is and could be and whatnot. So
yeah. How did you get into poetry? What's your background for discovering through music?
Yeah, music originally, yeah, and then I was in bands with people who were writing way better songs than I was. So I just wanted to play their songs. So then I stopped writing, like, you know, music for bands, and but I still wanted to keep writing. So then that turned into poetry. And then I had a family friend called Andrew Perry, who's actually, his quote is up on the wall here. He's since passed away, but he was the first person I knew who self-published his own poetry, and he had a little chapbook. And that sort of opened the idea in my head of, like, oh, you can actually do this, you know? Like, you can create your own work, put it out into the world as a solo person rather than being in part of a band, you know? So that got the gears turning for me, and then started releasing some books from there.
Outside of, you know, an academy, outside of a publishing house, there's a sense that people can write poetry, make a book, put it out in the world.
Yeah, I think everybody has... Yeah, I think everyone has a novel, their autobiography in them, and then whether that becomes like prose or whether it's poetry, everyone has something to say, you know, and an interesting way of saying it, if they're encouraged to do it, like I was encouraged to do it. And again, part of what we do here is to encourage people, you know, we have the writers group every Tuesday and open mic every Sunday, and we do lots of different poetry events and whatnot, so it's just try to encourage people to be confident enough in their own abilities, you know, which they all have.
I actually quote you fairly often on the show when people are talking about playing music or making art and sharing it, and I always say Sean Lidster told me that you never know who in the audience needs to hear exactly what you're putting out there right now.
That's
I think
true.
That's a really powerful, every poet is expressing something that is impacting somebody in the audience. It's a pretty powerful experience.
Yeah.
It can get a little rowdy, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with the rowdiness from time to time. It's, you know, smashing down all the bookshelves.
Well, right, yeah. We are sitting here at the bar, essentially, and you mentioned a quote on the wall, which...
Yeah, so...
Read something to me, yeah.
So you got the more books, and then right underneath that, the quote is... sometimes when you least expect it, you sometimes find love. And that was a line in Andrew's poetry.
Yeah.
That I just, it was so optimistic, you know, like right around the corner, you could have the best thing in the world coming to you, you know. And I just thought that was beautiful. It's stuck with me until, well, forever now. But I just wanted to put that up there, and a little tribute to him. It was actually the first poetry event I ever did. Back in Wales was a dedication to him, and I started up a free library in this coffee shop. We did a poetry event, which is pretty fun. I read some terrible poetry, but you know, I was young.
What? How do you get better? Just keep doing it? Do you study specific poets? Like, help people understand, you know, if they've started, and then they're at the point where they're like, yeah, I want to do more than just express my, you know, teenage angst. I want to be a poet. I want to put stuff in the world that impacts people.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a matter of time, clarity, and mentorship?
I think it's... just a way of hearing the world, you know, like whatever you bring in and whatever you absorb from the world, keeping your eyes and ears open to things. And I think it just naturally that develops over time, you know. It's like you'll write something, and then, you know, the first poem I ever wrote, the first poem of my first book, it's like some 5-page Allen Ginsberg ripoff, you know. Like, I was really trying to be like Howell. So then you went, it's like, oh, well, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. So I'm, you know, so you just kind of, just day by day, take it as it comes, enjoy doing it. Learn to listen, listen to people, what people say, you know, and turn off your phone, that kind of stuff, you know. Just, you don't need to be constantly distracted, because there's a lot of just natural, cool, worldly things to take in, you know. It's designed to make you addicted and take you away from whatever you're doing day by day, you know, like social media things. And maybe just spend 10 minutes a day just really listening to something, you know, like almost like a meditative process. You'll get something out of it, and then you'll be able to write about it and sing about it or whatever.
I want to know a little something about Wales and how that lives with you today. Here living in South Dakota.
I mean, since I was always, you know, I love my friends and my family and everything back home. And it's just, I think I took the country for granted you know, leaving the back garden, you're going over a mountain, which is, leads to a forest, which leads to a stream, which all these roaming horses and these beautiful trees. And that takes you to the town where you're going. And that town takes you to the city, or that city takes you to the ocean, you know. So there's so much on your doorstep there that I think I took for granted. But now being here, I absolutely miss all that, you know. I carry it with me in the shop. I mean, you can see the warning. This bar operates on Welsh time, you know. We've got Dylan Thomas on there. We've got a Cofiwch Tryweryn sign in the back there, which was a town that was made into a reservoir to give the English water. It was a Welsh town that they flooded, and they kicked like 127 people out or something. All the graveyards and everything was just, they said they would move the bodies and didn't. And so it was a whole horrible thing. So I tried to keep that alive and keep the conversation going. A lot of people obviously ask, you know, what brought you here and that kind of thing. So it's quite nice because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get England, Scotland and Ireland. People forget about Wales. So it's kind of nice to talk about for people.
Yeah.
And I just went back for Christmas, and so we try and go back at least once a year.
What kind of poets here come in the door? You hear all kinds.
Yeah. I mean, we, as varied as you could hope for, you know. So we've just started a new poetry session called the Potato Peelers Poetry, which is Ellery Krieger and G-Maw. I don't know if you know G-Maw. They're the two people who host it, and they have, so there'll be a, it's almost like a guest show sort of thing. So they have the people reading, and then those two sit at the table with a microphone and kind of like talk with you about the poems and ask questions, almost like what we're doing. But it's more like a talk show-esque poetry
hosted
night.
It's hosted poetry night.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to come check that out.
It's quite interesting. We've just done the second one this month, so we'll be doing another one next month. And it's definitely different to what I'm used to. So that's cool. So we get that. We did have... Friends of the People were here for like a year and a half, 2 years. No, maybe 2 years. But they've moved it over now to First Gen, which makes total sense, you know, because that's James, who was one of the people who started it, owns First Gen. So it makes sense that they would take it
owns
over.
What? First Gen?
First
What's
Gen.
That?
It's over in the 421 building, you know, okay. that area.
Okay.
And it's like a clothing shop, but they okay. do they host some events there too. So
yeah. Okay.
Pretty fun place. So we did have that group here. We've done our, you know, we have open mic every Sunday, so that's kind of taken over any sort of open mic poetry that we have.
Yeah.
Which we do have a couple of specific events coming up.
Yeah. Tell me what's coming up.
Skurf P Publishing, mm-hmm. they're hosting for the new anthology. But I think it's either that or like the 50th anniversary or something. There's some reason that they're doing it here. That's at the end of May. And then we have, so I think that's on the Saturday. Then the Monday, there's a camper van of poets traveling around the country right now. And there's like 10 poets. P.W. Covington actually put us in touch with the guys organizing it. So they're going to come here in their van and just do a lot of crazy old school hippie stuff and just shout some poems. And so that's going to be, it's like the 26th or something, but don't quote me on that.
We'll put links up on our website.
Yeah, I'll send you something. Yeah. That's going to be really fun. That's kind of something to have 10 poets not from town reading here, that's gonna be a trip. So
someone's gonna run away with that circus.
Yeah right, exactly. Yeah.
in their notebook anyway.
Yep. Yeah. And they have, I think the bus has like Further written on it, you know, and the whole like Ken Casey type idea that they're continuing. So
the Merry Pranksters are on the road.
Yeah. So I'm super excited for that one. It'd be cool.
You can find Full Circle Book Co-op online at fullcirclebookcoop.com. Sean Litzter is about to release a new poetry collection. It's called Smile at Night. He's been working on it for about 4 years. I asked him to read a few poems from the book. The first one here is called The Politics of Dog Pork.
Poetry is for people sitting in a view without a room. It is read from time to time, holding out last hopes. It is not like background music, too loud for that. It is necessary when it is necessary, in the middle of breakdowns and just before suicide. Sometimes people buy the books and never read them. It's likely. Wouldn't you rather sleep or put your head into a cold stream or a vat of boiling water? Have you ever cut off your own leg? I would recommend it for the freaks.
That's poet Sean Litster. The next poem is called Butler.
In the nun school, they hide in the toilet stalls and talk about the Buddha. Hitting veins, the shadows walls, the cows eat straw out of the window, sundown returns to night. When do the festivities begin, they ask. Nosferatu cuts his teeth in the bathroom mirror. A child comes home smelling of Sparn Ranch. Terror in the aisles and jelly beans in your snore. Bile ducts of our harmonies and scholars clean their smiles. The golden age of the peace sign in photographs of fields. Reminds me of bird shit on planning permitted bookshops, where babies hail strings and butlers eat cold steaks beneath dinner deals. And through the window, the sundown returns tonight. And the cost of living, eternal in its eyes, veins, stays still like shadows on the skyline.
Sean Litster's forthcoming book is called Smile at Night. Let's hear one more for National Poetry Month.
It's called Sickness in the Basement of the Hospital. The boy with the teeth in his chest has told the church his way. There's smoke in the air and the bars are all laughing and the lessons have all gone away. And out of tomorrow, in strange ways of sorrow, somebody with nothing to say. Sickness in the basement of the hospital. The preacher's on the street, his microphone set to repeat, sickness in the basement of the hospital. She's gone from my life, oh my light, my light, my light, sickness in the basement of the hospital. It's with a heavy heart that I was born too late to ever start. Sickness in the basement of the hospital. The jazz clubs are all filled. The singer was killed. Sickness in the basement of the hospital. Will you pay for this divorce? I said, of course, of course, of course. Sickness in the basement of the hospital. Was there a wound in the window? Is that some singing dildo? Sickness in the basement of the hospital. The music there was all playing, and the party there was all praying, sickness in the basement of the hospital. I used to be some kind of catch till I lit my body with a match, sickness in the basement of the hospital. I wonder what went wrong to make me make up this here song, sickness in the basement of the hospital. The bats have all flown upstairs, but who but me should even care, sickness in the basement of the hospital. Just throw me into the well before I'll tell what I will tell, sickness in the basement of the hospital. Throw me an intervention with birthday cards and good intentions, sickness in the basement of the hospital. Call me Mr. Whiskey and let everybody miss me, sickness in the basement of the hospital. There is nothing that I want or need, I spew up and then I feed, sickness in the basement of the hospital. I stopped in for a pint of booze. I stayed there singing Born to Lose, sickness in the basement of the hospital. There was something to something at some point. I left it in some sober joint, sickness in the basement of the hospital. The preacher said, there's nothing to fear. He goes day by day and year by year, sickness in the basement of the hospital.
That's poet Sean Litster. You can find his latest book, Smile at Night, in the days ahead at Full Circle Book Co-op in downtown Sioux Falls. And that's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.